Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
Okay, I'll tell you all about September 11th and what happened to me. But Ralph, I want to thank you for inviting me to be here today. I really appreciate it. I'm a 9/11 survivor. I'm also a volunteer at the National September 11th Memorial and Museum. But today I'm speaking only as through my experience as a survivor, and I'm not in any way representing the museum. There are literally millions of stories of individuals who were involved in 9/11, whether they were at the World Trade Center or near the World Trade Center, or even watching the events unfold on their televisions. This was the first global witness event. About one third or practically 2 billion people from around the world saw this happen in real time. There are so many stories, and here is one of them. This is my story. September 11th, 2001 was like any other September morning, but it was especially beautiful. It was a very, very blue sky day. It had the kind of blue sky that pilots and meteorologists refer to as severe clear. From my living room window in Greenwich Village, where I lived in September 11th, and also right now I'm speaking to you from the same apartment about 2 miles away from the towers. Ralph, could you put that first photograph on, please? This is a very unusual photograph. I'll describe it. It's a little bit dark, but this photograph is a moment in history that was probably forgotten. It was in the 1990s. And as you can see, the World Trade Center, looking out my living room window, is all lit up, except the North Tower, the middle third, is dark. What is this? This was a blackout. So for a couple of hours or so, the center part of the Trade Center was blacked out. You can see the North Tower with the antenna on top, and then just to the left of it, the South Tower. A very unusual photograph that is probably lost to history. On September 11th, I took the subway to work. The final stop was the World Trade Center. I walked through the shopping concourse, which was one level below street level, and I took elevators to arrive at my office around 8:30 in the morning. I was a banker at Fuji Bank, a large Japanese bank that occupied floors 79 through 82 in the South Tower. My desk was on the 82nd floor on the south side of the South Tower. As usual, I started the day with coffee, a cinnamon raisin bagel, and reading an email that might be coming from Tokyo that was just closing down as we were starting up. I never finished that cinnamon raisin bagel, but I think maybe someday, who knows, I might. Then at 8:46 a.m., 9/11 happened. American Airlines Flight 11 with 87 passengers and crew struck the north side of the North Tower, but I couldn't see it or hear it because I was on the south side of the South Tower. But a colleague who was working on the same floor as me, 82nd floor, he was on the north side and he could see the North Tower. He could see smoke. And rather than just running out of the building himself, he ran around the floor shouting to colleagues, "Smoke, get out." I didn't know what had happened. Looking out the window, I could only see some smoke blowing in the wind. It was coming from the North Tower toward the front north, going past the South Tower. And I looked at the smoke, and in the smoke, I could see what looked like confetti, you know, small pieces of paper. And they were blowing upward because the wind currents at the World Trade Center, these very large buildings, create unusual wind currents, and they were blowing up. Well, later I found out that these are just normal sheets of paper, like 8.5 by 11 letter paper. Whatever had happened, I wasn't sure, but I knew something was wrong, and I better get out of there. I'll find out later what happened, and maybe I'll return to work. So I walked away from my office, and then I just went back to my desk. I thought, well, gee, maybe I need to go home. I better get my keys and my wallet. And I left my BlackBerry, unfortunately. That was lost. We started to walk down the stairway very calmly. You know, in evacuation, we're told to walk down the stairs, don't take the elevator. And with our colleagues, we were walking down very calmly, no real concern. We heard an announcement from the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey. They own the World Trade Center. They still do. The announcement was, attention, building occupants. An aircraft has struck Tower 1, the North Tower. And the South Tower, where we were, is secure. Emergency help is on the way. That's all we knew. We continued to walk down from the 82nd floor on the stairway, but the stairs did not go all the way straight down directly. On the 76th floor, there was a crossover hallway that led from the stairway we were on to the continuation of the stairway to descend further. And I walked through that hallway intending to go to the stairs and continue to walk down, but I noticed there was an elevator in that hallway. It was a freight elevator, but there were people on it and there was space. So I got on the elevator and it started to descend. Even though we were told in a case of a fire or something, disaster, we should not be taking the stairs. And we know that on 9/11, approximately 200 people were killed because they were in elevators. Either when the plane struck the building, the elevators jammed and they got stuck and trapped in the elevator, or perhaps the aircraft itself, when it entered the building, it cut the cables to the elevator and the elevators fell down and people were killed. Hundreds of people were killed, unfortunately, that day. But my elevator made it to the 44th floor sky lobby. Hundreds of people were gathered. It was a very crowded scene. And there was an official with a bullhorn, an official from the Port Authority. And he was with bullhorn, he was saying that we should return to our workstation, that the building is secure and that we should not evacuate. That was a tragic misjudgment. And I believe that lives were lost. The officials knew that debris falling from the North Tower that had been struck by Flight 11, debris was falling down around the building and people who were evacuating out to the plaza area around the North Tower were being struck by this falling debris and were being killed. And just as no one could imagine an aircraft striking a building, certainly two was out of anyone's imagination. And so they made the tragic misjudgment telling us that the building is secure. And this was about 9:02. At 9:03, I couldn't imagine returning to the 82nd floor. 9:03, just a few seconds after I heard this announcement, I felt the crash of Flight 175. Basically, it struck my desk. Flight 175 struck the South Tower on the south side toward the east of the building. My desk was in the 82nd floor on the south side toward the east. The impact zone in the South Tower was between the 78th and the 85th floor. At that moment, United Flight 175 with 60 passengers and crew crashed into the South Tower, precisely where my office was located. I heard the crash, the building moved almost 3 feet and then started to shake. The Boeing 767, moving at roughly 540 miles an hour, entered the building with a force of approximately 25 million pounds. Still, the building stood. I realized immediately that this is an attack. This is no accident. And I'd better get out of the building as quickly as I can because I have to get out before the third one comes. So I looked over and I noticed the stairway and I started to walk down. There was a third plane and there was a fourth plane. The third plane struck the Pentagon in Washington, flight 77 with 59 passengers and crew and 125 people at the Pentagon were killed. The fourth plane, United Flight 93, was headed, we believe, to the Capitol in Washington, D.C., and brave passengers had spoken with their cell phones. They were able to contact people on the ground, loved ones, and they were told what had happened to the World Trade Center. And they knew, they just knew that this plane, which had been hijacked, by the way, they knew that because the hijackers had taken over, killed the pilot, and changed direction. And they knew that the plane was headed for no good. And they themselves had the courage and the bravery to take a vote, and they decided, we're not going to let this happen. We're going to do what we can. They went into the cockpit and to them from to the cap. Sadly, tragically, the terrorists crashed the plane in a field near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and all 37 passengers and crew were killed. But the lives of all those at the Pentagon at the Capitol, where the plane was headed, they were spared. It could have been much worse. So as I walked down 44 flights in the South Tower from the Sky Lobby, I had to slow down. There was no one on the stairway. I was running down the stairs, grabbing the rails with my hands like a monkey. And I thought I'd better slow down, because if I fall down and hurt myself, I could be in an even much worse situation. I didn't see anyone. People on the lower floors had already evacuated, and the first responders had not yet arrived to the South Tower. And it was just my good luck that the stairs ended on a concourse level, one level below street level. And I walked through the concourse. Shops were closed at that time. They were shuttered. I walked to the subway that I had just taken to come in, through the subway tunnel on the platform, and came out a few blocks away, north of the Trade Center. I looked up and I could see with my eyes for the first time the towers ablaze. As you can see in the photograph, an horrific, horrific sight. You can see the North Tower on the right with the antenna. The impact zone, the North Tower, was between the 93rd and the 99th floor. And as I mentioned, on the South Tower on the left, impact zone was a little bit lower, on the 78th to the 85th floor. But you can just imagine what one might feel looking at this from a few blocks away. That's another shot of it. I decided I'd better just walk home, because after all, I could use a walk. I was shaking. I was not in a good way. And the taxi driver came around the corner. The taxi driver had no clue, no idea what had just happened, because it had just happened. So he took me to my apartment. About 10 minutes, maybe around 9:35, 9:40, I walked into my apartment, and this is what I saw: these buildings on fire. And I took these photographs. From my living room, I could see what you're seeing now in the photograph, and I could only think, what, why, who could have done something like this? I tried to contact my family in New Jersey, but the telephone lines were overwhelmed and I couldn't get through. Then a friend called me from Australia. He had lived in New York, and he knew what was happening, and he wanted to ask about how I'm doing, if I was okay. And while I was speaking with my friend Jeff in Australia, I watched the towers burn, as you can see in the photograph. And then at 9:59, I saw a blue sky where the South Tower had stood. Next picture, please. And that is just after the collapse. You can see the North Tower on the right. And on the left, you see that it's not there. As the smoke cleared, I could see the sky. Next picture, please. Just another view of the horrendous smoke cloud that went way up into space. And the next one, please. Well, this is the rescue and recovery effort that night. We had lights on all the time. Sorry, my photograph somehow got messed up here in my camera. When the building collapsed, I was on the phone with my friend from Australia, and all I could say is, Jeff, I see blue. I could not process in my brain what I had just seen, but I knew what I had seen. Jeff had the presence of mind to say, William, have you spoken with your family? Well, I said, no, I was trying to reach them, but the lines were overwhelmed. And he said, okay, we're going to hang up now and you're going to call your family. So I did. I called my sister in New Jersey and I just, the shriek that came from my sister, she knew the sound of my voice meant I was alive. I shall never forget that moment. I was on the telephone most of that day. People were inquiring and I seemed outwardly calm, but I was physically in shock for some weeks to come. And for some of what happened that day, it took years for some difficult memories to return. So many questions and no answers. Why were so many innocent people killed? Will life as we've known it ever return to be the same? Is this the beginning of a war? What will happen next? I only had hope based on nothing, raw hope, that life would or could become normal again. Unfortunately, the world changed that day and maybe it will never be the same as before 9/11. When there were reports that Osama bin Laden was likely behind these attacks, I resolved immediately not to hate him. Bin Laden had already done so much damage and I could not let him cause any more harm to myself. And so I simply ignored the thought. When he resigned from the office of President of the United States, Richard Nixon learned from his own self-destruction. And he said, sometimes people hate you. You can't do much about that. But when you give in and you hate them back, then you start to destroy yourself. My life now became about self-preservation, helping my company to survive, but never allowing hate to come into my heart. This was an attack on civilization itself. The world had changed. Billions of people around the world were traumatized as they watched this event in real time on television. They saw humanity at its worst on that day. There was silence in New York. You know, New York is a bustling city, but all we heard were quiet except for the sirens, the emergency vehicles going up and to and from the World Trade Center. People shared shock and a sense of sadness and loss. You could see it as you walked around the city on people's faces. No words need to be said. That day and the days that followed seemed like one long day. That went on for weeks. 23 of my colleagues disappeared that day. Remains of 11 of my colleagues were subsequently identified. But for the others, there were no memorial services because there was no identification. To this day, the chief medical examiner is still working on the remains, trying to identify loved ones for the families so they can have closure, but I'm afraid all victims will never be identified. I'm a music lover. I attended a concert at Carnegie Hall weeks later on October 6th. The Berlin Philharmonic Orchestra members had voted that they would come to New York. It would be a gift to New Yorkers. It took great courage to fly at that time. Kind of like now when people are not flying too much because of COVID. At that time, people were afraid of terrorism and the planes were empty. The program was changed. The orchestra performed 3 Beethoven symphonies. And as I listened to the music, I felt for the first time since September 11th, an uplift, a comfort. For the first time, I realized that there is hope, there is beauty, there is truth, and that life is not always, but sometimes it can be beautiful, and that my life again might become beautiful. There was hope. On 9/11, we witnessed the worst of the worst of what humankind is capable of. Yet there was also the best, the bravery of the first responders and building occupants who risked their lives and saved others. Many of these brave men and women perished in doing so. Expressions of compassion and solidarity came to us from all around the world. it really helped. The best of humankind came out, the compassion, the solidarity, everyone was with us. After Janelle Guzman was rescued at 12:30 on September 12th, the next day, the effort became a cleanup operation to continue to search for survivors, but none was found. And so it became a matter of finding recovering remains and removing 1.8 million tons of debris that was the World Trade Center. It went on for day and night, and we had a picture. I don't know if we can go back to that picture just showing the light at night when the rescue operation 24/7, it went on until May 28th, 2002, about 9 months. The pile of debris actually burned. You can see the smoke in the photograph, and it actually burned for several months because what was trapped underneath was toxic and it was flammable. And many of their cleanup recovery workers are suffering now these illnesses that came from their exposure to these toxic substances. The death, unfortunately, did not end on September 11th. So many years later, many of these heroic individuals, the first responders, are developing cancers and many other lung ailments, and more than 2,000 have died since. The U.S. led a coalition to eliminate Al-Qaeda, where Osama bin Laden headed Al-Qaeda. They went to, the U.S. military went to Afghanistan to destroy the camps and Al-Qaeda. And then the U.S. government told the world that Saddam Hussein of Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. An atmosphere of fear persisted. After all, we had just been attacked for the first time. Could it happen again? I don't know. We don't know. But there was fear, even paranoia, even though the notion that weapons of mass destruction was just supported by some very flimsy evidence and speculation rather than facts. Then the violence of 9/11, the United States went into Iraq. Solidarity dissipated, and there was more chaos and killing in the Middle East, and it continues to this day. There had been strong objections among the people of the United States and around the world, protests, but still the government did not listen and invaded Iraq, and there was so much destruction and more killing. After years of intensive investigation by the bipartisan 9/11 Commission as the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the National Institute of Standards and Technology, we now know what happened and why it happened on 9/11. The 9/11 Commission's recommendations for safety were implemented. They had extensive recommendations because no one wants this to happen again, and these recommendations were implemented. We cannot say that an attack can never happen in the future, but we can say that the measures implemented greatly reduce the likelihood and the chance that this would ever happen again. This global threat has now been reduced. What happened on 9/11? Was this just an act of pure evil? My personal view, my opinion, is that human beings have the potential to do great things. We can go in one of two directions. We can embrace life, love ourselves and others, and make great progress using technology to create a world that's a better place, to cure COVID and do other things, climate change. But there's a dark side to the human potential. When fear displaces the capacity to love, then the potential for hate and destructive acts and great suffering can be realized, unfortunately. When charismatic leaders tap into that fear and create a depraved and deranged fictional ideology that justifies the hate, there can be no respect for human dignity and the value of human life under these extremist ideologies. They encourage acts of destructiveness. This was Osama bin Laden. It's counterintuitive to consider that anyone would sacrifice their own life. All the terrorists couldn't wait to become martyrs. And they wanted to cause the maximum amount of destruction and death. Still, there is some historical precedent from this. Bin Laden incited his followers to kill as many people as they lives for fantasy and their ideology that if they killed themselves and many other people, they would go to paradise after their death. The terrorist ideology negated the human being's most basic instinct, survival. The terrorists' own lives no longer became relevant to them. They just wanted to be martyrs. That's what happened on 9/11 when 2,983 innocent victims, not just America's, but people representing more than 60 countries around the world, all races, all religions, they were killed. And then there were the lives of countless lives of their loved ones. What the events of September 11th left me with is a realization that the world is a dangerous and uncertain place, and we don't know the future. Now I try to make the most of every day. Each day is a precious gift. Admittedly, some days are better than others. Life is short and uncertain, and I suggest that we take nothing for granted. Anything can happen to anyone at any time. Today, live for today, be in the moment, and tomorrow you can live for tomorrow. Be mindful of the present and appreciate every moment. But how can we do this? I believe that we must make the most of our own lives by being kind to ourselves, being kind to our loved ones, our family, our siblings, our teachers, our friends. And most importantly, to be kind to strangers as well, to people we don't know. We need to be aware that we are all in this boat on planet Earth together. What happened on 9/11 brought out the worst of the worst of humankind, humanity, hate and destructiveness. Yet in response, we witnessed the best compassion, solidarity, and the humanist values that recognize human dignity, the importance of every individual, respect, tolerance, and the value of every human life itself. It's tragic that it's a terrible event to bring out the best of humanity, and we should always remember, and I would assert, that there must always be hope. Within humanity, we have the potential for love, compassion, and progress to making life on Earth what is possible. Let's hope that life will be better in the future, and that we and our children and our grandchildren will enjoy a more peaceful Earth. Is this a fantasy, an idealistic thought? I would assert that we must have hope, because without hope, there is no hope. I learned from my 9/11 experience to think outside the box. On 9/11, what previously was inconceivable became real. It happened. Extremely unlikely events do occur. Let me conclude by saying that I've been very, very lucky. I'm not brave, I'm certainly no hero. Building responders, first responders, building occupants who helped others evacuate safely, they're the heroes. They risked their lives, and all those who worked during the rescue, recovery, cleanup period, they're the heroes of 9/11. After 9/11, I remained in physical shock for about 6 weeks, and I suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder maybe for about a year. But over the past many years, I've become 90-something percent healed, and for the rest of my life, I will appreciate my life that much more. And for the final picture, we just look at what we have now and what we have in the future, and that's the World Trade Center. These days, and that's the top of the World Trade Center with a beautiful spire going into the sky. And these days I appreciate life, knowing how fortunate I've been, and keep September 11th as a strong but benign memory. I revisit every year and get in touch with that experience and my feelings on September 11th. This is what I have to say, and there's the last picture. Actually, that's a very interesting one, looking from above the World Trade Center, looking down toward that spire that goes into the sky, and the round, that's where antennas are for broadcasting. You can see it's a pretty interesting top of the building. So that's what I want to say, and I'm very happy to listen and respond to any questions you might have.
Yeah, so we'll get through a few student questions. I know there's a lot of them. But first of all, thank you for speaking, William. We appreciate it greatly. And if you guys can't already tell, William is a docent at the World Trade Center Memorial and Museum. So he's done this a whole lot as far as speaking to people about his story. So I will go ahead, Kamal Preet, I'm gonna unmute you. You can ask the first student question. You had a good one that you had sent me.
Hi, I'm very happy to have this chance to talk with you, and you have a wonderful story. My question is, do you think the city and the nation reacted? And do you think that the nation still lives in fear or has recovered its position?
I'm sorry, the reaction?
She wanted to know, what did you think when you heard the plane first hitting, like what went through your mind?
Survival. I'm a New Yorker, and so when you're referring to the first plane that struck the North Tower, there was uncertainty. There was, we didn't know what had happened. But as a New Yorker, as a survivor, if something happens in the next building, then just time to get out. So I'm not sure if that was responsive to the question, Ralph. Or
no, that is the second good. Part, perhaps you're just being honest. And we have a question from one of our directors, Richard. I'm unmuting you so you can ask your question.
Hello, William. Thank you for taking the time. I understand that we have about 160 kids from Italy listening to you this evening. So an important message you made with the students tonight, in which you I'm delightfully surprised that you sit there and you said that from the very next day, almost, you were able to start reasoning through this, and instead of assigning blame to somebody, simply get on with let's take a more human approach to the entire thing. If I can, I have a two-part question. The first part is, in the 2 decades that have transpired since the event, has your anger ever come out in the sense that, what happened and I'm not happy with the answers?
I had a tremendous feeling of sadness because what had happened set the world back. It set civilization back. If we had any illusion that we're living in a safe world where, we can predict the future, well, that kind of went out the window. And the fact that an act like this could happen, that anyone was capable of doing something like this, killing so many innocent people indiscriminately, it just left me with great sadness. I was depressed, I was in shock, I was confused, how could this happen? But I was very clear on not allowing negativity and hate and anger, because that's my personality. And I think you raise an important point, and that is when 9/11 happened, individuals, they're less qualities came out. If somebody was kind of a fearful person, fearful of doing this and that, they became extremely fearful. They didn't want to go outside, suicide bombers, who knows. If people were angry personalities, they would become angry. If people were, sad and perhaps like myself, they became depressed. And so it was partly an intentional not letting Osama bin Laden do any more harm to me. I recognized immediately that we have to get through this. It's a challenge. I don't know if we can. It wasn't until the Berlin Philharmonic played this beautiful Beethoven music that I thought, yes, there is hope and there is beauty. But to this day, I have no anger, just really, really sadness that this had to happen and so many people had to suffer.
And to your credit, I mean, just the fact that you share with the students this, going to a concert 4 weeks after this happened, approximately, is just amazing. The second part of I think that the students are understanding there's a message, which I'm sure is intentional on your behalf, that a lot of things you went through in the post 9/11 attacks are a lot of the emotions, the sentiments, the sensations about the world are being very much put to test now with COVID. And I'm asking the students to pay attention to your words by saying, take this approach. Don't be afraid about confronting life in a serene and happy smile. And my other question, William, and then I'm gonna let the students get to it. I connected about 2 minutes late, and you were showing a photograph of the blackout. Can you explain that to me quickly? Was that the day before, or I don't understand?
Honestly, that's something that's lost to history and it's lost to my memory. I was in my living room one night in the 1990s, and I looked out toward the World Trade Center, and I said, "What is this? You know, the building is partially unlit. It's a blackout." So it's a totally not related to 9/11. I just wanted to show what it, you know, the towers looked like out my window, but it was way before 9/11, and I bet if I went looking, nobody would ever remember that had happened. Yeah.
Thank you, William. I very much enjoyed this. Very much.
So we have a question from Mev. Mev, I'm going to go ahead and unmute you, and you should be able to ask your question. You had a really great question.
Thank you. Nice to meet you, Mr. Ruff. And I really get shivers listening to your speech. And my question is, have you ever come back where the World Trade Center were? If not, next year will be the 20th anniversary. Are you planning to go there, and what are you going to do?
Well, actually, I was there yesterday. The museum, the 9/11 museum is open, and the memorial is open for visitors. And it's a place that is very comforting. It's very, I think Ralph Krauss visited the museum and maybe can also see that it's a very safe, a very serene place to heal from this terrible event, you know, to kind of re-experience it a little bit, but to heal from the terrible shock and sadness that happened.
So before we let you go, because I know you touched on a lot of the different student questions, could you give the students advice about persevering through adversity? Because we all have our own different kinds of adversity throughout our lifetime. What your adversity was unimaginable. What kind of advice would you give to people who need to persevere through adversity?
When 9/11 happened, the thing that really helped was the coming together, the expressions from all over the world of solidarity, of compassion. We understand, how can we help you? People coming to New York, just, you know, getting in a car or flying an airplane, coming to New York to do whatever they could to help. Life, as we know, is dangerous. It's uncertain. Whoever could have thought of something like COVID that we're all suffering with now, and we know so many people who are suffering from it. The compassion that was shown is a way to offset the reality of some of these terrible things that happened to us. And, you know, in our lives, 9/11 was extraordinary. I hope it's a once in a lifetime, once in a event that will never, ever happen again or anything like it. But we do know that there are other terrible, tragic events. You know, we have car crashes, accidents, illness. After 9/11 was so helpful. And so the message I would have is to be kind to yourself. Treat yourself with the greatest respect and love. Persevere in your life, because you don't know, but running from, not repressing, but fully embracing this terror, then it diffuses the harm it can do to you. But I can't emphasize enough, be kind to yourself and be kind to your loved ones, your family, your friends, your brothers, your sisters, your teachers, your fellow students, And perhaps even more importantly, be kind to everyone else. If everyone did this just a little bit, we'd all be supporting each other. And no matter what happened, we'd be helping each other to get through it.
Well, we cannot thank you enough for taking time out of your day and in the busy, busy city that is New York. I know a few of us were supposed to be in New York around this time of the year, but it got canceled because COVID. But I just want you to know that I really, really care for you deeply. You are a wonderful friend, and I like knowing that you're doing well. And before we let you go, I'm going to go ahead and unmute everybody so we can thank you, and you can hear everyone around the world. We're going to let everyone... Thank you. Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and ask everybody to unmute. And can we say thank you to William?
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.